if you have 200 chefs in the kitchen, then at some point, you know, like you can might want to create like the world's best five Michelin star dish, but you have like 200 chefs in the kitchen, it probably will end up being like shish kebab or something.
This is the Go Maluku podcast.
I thought I'd jump on this episode to talk a little bit about challenges that Indigenous peoples are facing at the UN in terms of participation and some ways on how you can face them and also obviously overcome them. So I selected 10 of them and I'll go through each and one of them, what the pain points are and what potentially could be the solution for each of them. So let me start with making sure that Indigenous peoples, their voices are heard. And it is something that has been a concern of a lot of Indigenous peoples that, you know, they spend like a gazillion dollars to go to Geneva for a week. That includes local travel, air travel, economy class, hotels, food. So many of these Indigenous people, like they cannot afford that to, to be something that is not ROI positive. Same, that's just in Neva, let alone the Pullman Forum in New York. That's 2 weeks traveling to New York. That's local transportation, a travel visa. For a lot of Indigenous people, Switzerland is not much easier than to get into than the United States. Then it's hotel, and then it's food, and that's for 2 weeks. So that's a major challenge. So on top of that is, and I'll cover the financial situation a little bit later on, but the thing that I wanted to touch on with this particular point is that it's an investment. It's spend all this money and you want to make sure that your investment is effective. So you have a return on investment. Well, the thing is that with an ROI in the business world is different than ROI in terms of participation in the UN. So to ensure that your perspectives are included in every conversation, you got to make sure that you are there in every conversation and not just, for example, the Pullman Forum. 2 weeks and it's like there's a lot of Indigenous people that go to the Pullman Forum and they go there and mostly like what I want you to prevent is use it as just as a photo op to validate yourself. But actually like contribute to the movement, contribute to the work of Indigenous peoples globally. So what you should not be doing or consider that as an ROI is, hey, I'm at the Pullman Forum. Let me take some photos of myself in the chair behind a microphone and, you know, go live on Facebook and that's it. That's not ROI. ROI is actually like, all right, engaging with other Indigenous peoples, engaging in every single agenda item that is, that is relevant to what you want to bring forward in at the Pullman Forum or Expert Mechanism or anywhere else. So that is something that I want you to keep in mind is that making sure that Indigenous voices are heard, that's all up to you. It's not up to an NGO or whoever. It's up to you. And it's up to you to make sure that you are doing as much as humanly possible while you're in Geneva, New York, Bonn, Paris, Nairobi, wherever, that you actually are making the most time ROI positive. So making sure that you are actually not being productive, but actually being effective with your time. So that's one of the major challenges that I want you to think about. And that's what I do. Like I want to go to the forum in a couple of weeks. Like I make sure that as much as possible, every hour I'm doing something. And I see it as a win if I have less than 30 minutes to spend in the plenary area, if I can have as many bilateral side meetings with Indigenous peoples, member states, whoever, during those almost 2 weeks that I'm in New York. So that's like ROI positive. So get as much, you know, like FaceTime with states, UN agencies, other Indigenous peoples as possible. So that's how you get your voice heard in these meetings, and make sure that the idea is not to make your voice just heard, but actually amplify it. And the only way to amplify it is to create this flywheel effect, is that like you do as much as humanly possible, go into as many meetings as possible, and then at the end of the road, like end of the day, after 2 weeks, you probably see some elements of what you brought forward in these conversations on youth and its participation, other issues, you know, and that is ROI positive, and that's how you make your voices heard. So the second challenge that I'd like to talk about, as well as that, working with or understanding the UN's rules of procedure. It's a pain. It's a pain to understand the rules of procedure of, let's start with the expert mechanism or the Bremen Forum on Indigenous Issues, let alone Human Rights Council or even the General Assembly. And then you have like a lot of things that are outside of it, which are like the UNFCCC, UNCBD, all these other conventions that touch on the lives and livelihoods and circumstances of Indigenous peoples. To really be able to, sorry, let me pause that a little bit. The thing that I want you to keep in mind is that when you go to the Bremen Forum or go to any of these meetings, make an effort to understand these rules of procedures. Make a conscious effort to understand it. And by that I mean is that as Indigenous peoples, we are participating within the UN system. Like, it's not perfect. I'm the first one to admit that. But it goes into mindset. It's also about we are here within the UN to participate, master the system, to be able to change it eventually. That is what the objective is, right? Like what we are, we're trying to be part of it. But actually, the idea is to change it through making sure that Indigenous peoples can participate in, you know, like in these meetings and actually affect them, and not just being at a side thought or at the end of the list, speaking for a minute and a half or something, but actually like being inside of these decision-making processes. All right. So it is super important that when you start going to the UN, like, all right, obviously, first of all, like you start to understand the mandate of the Permanent Forum or expert mechanism, what you can, what you cannot do, and all that stuff. That's the beginning of it. But if you really want to like change it, if you really want to change like the General Assembly, for example, or the Human Rights Council, like it's really very important that you start understanding the rules of procedure and also start to, you know, like massage it a little bit, start to play with it a little bit, like seek the boundaries and try to push them. That is why it is so important to, start, you know, like working with the UN's rules of procedure, not understanding them, but actually working with them. So it's super detailed, it's super complex. I understand that. And if you're new, then the last thing you want to do is you dive deep into that. But this is definitely something that it can be super beneficial if you start embracing the idea that the UN has its rules and procedures, and it can be interpreted in many ways, right? So a little bit of creativity is, if you like creativity, this is your thing. Because then you start to look at the rules of procedure and you start to play with words a little bit so that at the end of the day, we push the boundaries. Like we move the needle a little bit in our favor when it comes to implementing or advancing, achieving the ends of the UN Declaration. So something that I really want to drive home as well as that, if this is much more like an intermediate level, is really to start working with the UN's rules of procedures, mandates, and all that stuff. So, like similar to that is the third one is you like to understand how the UN works. Rules of procedure is one thing. The other one is like how the how the processes are. Like some of these processes are not necessarily written. Some processes are just understood, and by like putting yourself in a very, very humble position by saying to yourself, like, all right, even if you've been here for like 1, 2, 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, but maintaining that level of humility and just to observe, all right, so what's this process? What is this protocol? Like, and trying to figure that out, ask people that have been before, like, well, why do you do this? Why does that happen when he says this or she says that? So some of these things are like processes that are understood. And it's super helpful to really start to be able to understand that particular part of culture. That's what it is. So you have rules of procedure, obviously, but you also have the culture. And a culture is actually very, very good to start understanding that. Once you start, engaging in negotiations, like so what the culture is in some of these negotiations, what a culture is when you start engaging with some of these member states bilaterally or with a group of states. It's super interesting to start figuring that out. And if you start understanding that, it's much easier to start engaging with the UN system, these countries or groups of countries with the UN system, UN agencies and everything else, because you start to see that as a game. Every game has certain etiquette, have certain behaviors that are understood, that are accepted. And the funny thing is that once you start start to observe, like you're an anthropologist, or like you're in the zoo, like you see all these member states doing things, and like, all right, so that country is going to that country. Interesting. Oh, now both of them are going to that country. That's even more interesting. Like stuff like that is to understand these dynamics, this group process and everything else. Once you have to figure that out, on top of figuring out the rules of procedure, you're in. You're like almost like 50% of trying to get somewhere, get something done, because like the dynamics, how the cement is put between the bricks, So that is something that I think is a challenge that can be overcome when you go to the UN and you want to do something, but you don't know how. Like, all right, ROP and the culture, trying to understand that. Well, the thing is, what that means is that you come back more often. You have to come back. Like, you can't say like, all right, Berman Forum sucked. Didn't get to present my 3 minutes. This whole thing sucks. I'm out. All right. If that is what you want to do, fine. But the thing is that in this whole process, it's super, 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 the super, super, super smart thing to do is keep coming back, keeping the pressure on, like keeping being in there, in the faces of the UN, being in the faces of the member states, to basically show them that, hey, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. So you might as well start accepting that. So those are the things that I really wanted to like, that I hope that people start to understand is that, the culture, trying to understand the culture and trying to understand the ROP is very important, but also very important to keep coming back. Number four is obviously, and this is what everyone is afraid of, well, not afraid of, but very much aware of, is that dealing with complex politics. Obviously, right now we have several wars going on, including the Russia-Ukraine war, you have the war against the people of Palestine. So like those are geopolitical issues that are front and center. So I've seen it in the Human Rights Council negotiations. It was definitely also like, it changed the ambiance in the third committee negotiations in New York. So it definitely has an impact. Well, those are like the excesses or like the extremes, obviously. But there are also like politics, like there's economical alliances, there are negotiating blocks. EU is one of them. You have in the climate change context, with G77 plus China, you have ILAC, LDCs in the Geneva context of CARICOM, GULAG countries, like if all these groups, and you have, and those are like the obvious ones. And then you have like the point-to-point bilateral politics that are ongoing as well. So they all play a role. The thing is, what I want you to understand is that, is don't be too much focused on your own assumptions. So for example, like I had it like a while ago, a colleague of mine, when there was a UPR review of a country, and this colleague was like, right, this is my position, and can you help me with lobbying? I said, yeah, sure. What is position? Sure. So I read the position paper, and then in my head, I was like, all right, so these like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 countries might be of interest. And then give me like another like hour and a half, and I might have like 20 countries for you to start engaging with. So this colleague was, no, I'll focus on the first 5 because these other 15 countries, their track record is bad when it comes to human rights. So what I tried to explain to this colleague was like, well, the thing is with the Universal Periodic Review is it's like a popularity contest. So it's super important to start like talking to all these member states because all these member states want to be able to present one of these recommendations, and hopefully that one of their recommendations gets, not noted, but actually accepted by the country under review. So it can be very helpful to see beyond the politics and see just this country or several countries that might not be on your Christmas list, but if they have an interest in ask a question or provide a recommendation focused on the rights of indigenous peoples to this particular country under review, like go for it. So that's what I want you to understand as well, is that like beyond the politics, it's very good to understand the politics and to maneuver that. But it's also very important to see that, you know, like we have like all these member states and they all play a role and they're all like, for you at least, part of the pieces of the puzzle. So like it can be very helpful to start, you know, like playing with the pieces of the puzzle or the pieces of the chess game. So that is super important. Politics ongoing. You have indigenous versus state politics as well. That plays a role as well. And it's very important to start thinking about, all right, how, start preparing for that. So before we go to a meeting and you might be afraid that you'll run into a certain country because that country has been like violating your human rights or your family's human rights or your community's human rights. Start preparing. Preparing for what happens if that you run into a representative of that country, you know, and what to do. And or also, who should you contact, you know, to make sure that, hey, if anything happens, I'm safe, or this person knows where I am. So apart from the geopolitical context and everything else, and I can like spend like 2 hours talking about like exactly the what I call like the political landscape, it is also super important to start, to be very much aware of politics between you, your indigenous peoples and a country concerned, or some indigenous peoples with some of their countries concerned. You know, so it's, it can be hard to be very much aware of all these politics, but like if you start engaging, if you start like I said, humility, observe, and if you don't know, ask a question. Ask people that have been there before. It's like, hey, what do you think about this? And then you start maneuvering, right? So, and that's how you start to understand the geopolitical landscape. And it's always moving. There's always something happening. You cannot 100% predict whatever the political or political impacts will be or the consideration will be. But the last thing you should be doing is to assume, based on what you see on TV, that you assume that is also the reality within these negotiations. That's absolutely 99% not true. So keep an eye on that when you start thinking about like the geopolitical landscape. Number five is keeping up continuous advocacy. And that's something that I see happening everywhere. People go to the print forum, first year, great. Second year, they come back and then poof, they're gone. Or they try out MRIP and then poof, they're gone. The thing is that within these realms, and you got to be very, very much aware of that, that once you present a statement at the permanent forum, do not expect that the next day you and peacekeepers will be knocking on your door and asking like, hey, how can I help you? That's not the case. What you should be super aware of is that like it's, you know, you have almost 200 countries that, you know, like that make that decision to do anything. And if you have 200 chefs in the kitchen, then at some point, you know, like you can might want to create like the world's best five Michelin star dish, but you have like 200 chefs in the kitchen, it probably will end up being like shish kebab or something. You know, not that shish kebab is bad, but just to give an idea of that there's like it's a race, almost like a race to the bottom. Now, what is super important to keep in mind then is that it's keep pushing, not keep coming back, keep the momentum going. Like it's because the moment that you drop off the radar, if you stop pushing, they will not like come back to you like, hey, Ghazali, you stop pushing. So do you want to continue doing this or not? They won't do that. You know, so it's very, very important that if you have something that you really want to achieve, for example, implementation of UN declaration in your country, or you want a new status for indigenous peoples at the UN General Assembly, all those things, like that takes time and planning. So start thinking about, you know, like long-term plans, you know, and by long-term, I don't mean like 20, 30, 40 to 50 years. Nobody wants to do that, but it is something to start keeping in mind is that, all right, so what's my objective? Like this year, what is my objective and what do I want? What like are like two key things, key results that I want to achieve? All right, you put that down on a piece of paper. First meeting comes around, permanent forum. All right, so what is my objective and what will be my key results for the permanent forum? And how will that relate to my overall objective key results for this year? And so that's how you move things forward. You know, it's making subtle but significant steps. You have to really keep that in mind. It's not like I said, like one speech, three minutes, and next day the UN peacekeepers come knocking on your door. It is really about like moving that glacier. It's maneuvering it. You have to do it subtle, but the thing is that keep pushing. The best analogy that people have been using is that you need to have the audacity to do as much as humanly possible every day, but have the patience of an angel to acknowledge that whatever you want to do, whatever this big hairy audacious goal is, and that it will take time to achieve that. However, you will have like boom, 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 like in the dirt, like getting your hands dirty. You will do as much as humanly possible, but have ultimate patience for that big, hairy, audacious goal to become like reality. So that's something that I want you to keep in mind as well when it comes to like keeping up this continuous advocacy, diplomacy within the UN context. Number six is obviously pushing for these issues to be discussed. And that's something that I've seen happen in many cases around the world or in definitely different UN meetings. Permanent Forum, like all these indigenous peoples come together and everyone has their urgencies. Everyone has their priorities. Human Rights Council, Geneva, Expert Mechanism, UNFCCC, COP, CBD COP, like yeah, people coming in, everyone has their objective and key results. So what is it that, how can you start, start to fight for the issues to make sure that these get on the UN agenda? First of all, is you talk to your colleagues. It's like, hey, what is your issue? What is your issue? So a very good example is that this is not necessarily with indigenous peoples, but you can also apply it with indigenous peoples because I did it with member states. What I try to do always is that at the beginning of the year in January, I try to set up as many what I call casual coffee dates, casual coffee meetings as possible. Like 30 to 45 minutes, just having coffee, mainly talking about, hey, what are your areas of interest this year? What are you trying to deliver this year? And how can we, can we help each other if there's an overlap? Stuff like that. Because then, this country wants to do that. Let's talk so about this objective. I can talk to that country. With this objective, I can talk to that country. And do that with indigenous peoples as well. It's to together that we push the level of debate, that we push the UN to do something that we all see as beneficial to indigenous peoples. So for example, Permanent Forum upcoming in 2024, and I've been talking to a lot of indigenous people for a year now, is that, initially the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples 10th anniversary is what a lot of indigenous peoples want to see become a reality. That's not happening yet, who knows? But definitely 2027, the 20th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. What are we doing? And we cannot just let that go by as in throw on some balloons and some confetti and then done and we'll see you again in 10 more years. No, you want to make this a high level major event. So that takes talking, I'm not saying negotiating, but I'm actually talking to these other indigenous people, like, hey, this is what's coming up. This might be interesting for all indigenous peoples because, hey, at the World Conference outcome document, not many operative paragraphs were actually implemented. We still want to have this UN declaration implement in a good way, robust way. Let's start pushing for this, for these 20th anniversary of the UN declaration, and I'll start developing key methods on what the key deliverables should be in 2027. For example, a mechanism for repatriation of indigenous peoples' artifacts, ancestral remains, et cetera, and as participation is one of them. Those are things that you can think about, start, pushing for with other indigenous peoples so that it will be discussed, that it will be taken on board. And then if you do that in tandem with keep coming back, Geneva, New York, and your knowledge of the landscape and also knowing the rules of procedure and the culture within the UN, all these things will actually start to come alive. And that is something that we all want to do, right? So definitely one of the things that you can start thinking about or start doing is pushing for indigenous issues by having just hey, let's get some coffee at the Bremen Forum. What are you doing? What are you doing? Or better yet, do it before. Do it before so that during the Bremen Forum, you can hit the ground running. Like, all right, recommendation, boom, 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 boom. Item three, boom, 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 boom. Item four, boom, 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 boom. Stuff like that. The seventh point that I want to bring up with you is getting the needed support and the resources. And that's like the biggest problem that everyone is facing. Like I said, super, super, super expensive to go to Geneva. Like, I live in Geneva and I'm like, holy shit. The price for a bus ticket or the price for getting a sandwich is insane, absolutely insane. Let alone if you are, I don't know, from some country and you've been saving all year round for, to go to the Geneva for 1 week in the summer. Prices, flight tickets might be like super surging. And then there's hotel and then food and everything else. So a lot of people are saving. A lot of people are actually like applying for grants. Luckily, there's a UN Volunteer Fund for Indigenous peoples that you can apply to, which I highly recommend that you apply early enough because they have a window that closes like 3 months in advance of the actual meeting. So that is something that you can apply to. The thing is that there's so many people that want to go to these meetings, so they have to like select. So what do you do if you cannot do that, if you're not selected as a volunteer fund grantee? So you save money all year long. You ask other organizations to, you could do that. The thing is, what I've done for 18 years is actually I've worked as like almost like full time in the restaurant business and like front of house, but mostly back like in the kitchen, saving money. I made like extra hours, a lot of extra hours, just to be able to pay my own way to New York, Geneva, and everywhere else. It's not perfect because, you know, like I you sacrifice a lot of your free time. But again, like, if you have this objective, if you have this burning desire to do something, keep going. That's what I did for almost 18 years. Like, I really paid mostly my own way to some of these meetings. Most of these meetings, sorry. Would I recommend you to do that? It puts you in a mindset though. Like, you're a warrior. Like, I'm going for it. I'm going for it. I'm doing this because this is my why, so that I can, you know, stuff like that. To get a taste, so you can taste, like, so that you're hungry to go to this meeting, but you like invested a lot of time and energy in, like, I don't know how many dishes I've made or burned my palms and my arms in the oven. Just to be able to like pay my flight to Glasgow or Madrid, wherever, like you have to busy cop or whatever, you know. At least that's how I have done it. And then you can always like, and this is something also, like, it's ask people around you, like that like, hey, I want to go to the Bremen Forum. I want to go to MRIP. It's super expensive. I know UN advocacy is not as sexy as building a well in Africa, Asia, or in the Arctic, whatever. But it is important. So, hey, can you contribute something? That's also an idea. Like, I wish that I had a step-by-step idea that's waterproof, that you can get you to these meetings every day of every time, that you don't have to worry about finances and budget and all that stuff. I'm working on it though. Like, I'm trying to figure that out myself. And once I've figured it out, I'll let you know. But also letting you know, like, that, you know, it's there's ways to do it. I did it the hard way, which is struggle, which was like really like, all right, extra hours, extra hours, extra hours, extra hours. And I don't regret it. I am very happy with the with how I did it, with the decision that I made. But yeah, it might not be something for you, but it's definitely good to be hungry. Like if you really want to go to the UN, like let's see how hungry you are to go to the UN. And then you'll definitely find the funding that you're required to, yeah, go to Geneva, New York, or wherever your struggle may take you. Number eight is staying strong and flexible. And that is something that I see a lot of people having challenges with. And by staying strong is definitely like it's akin to like, all right, keep coming back. That's what I'm talking about. So I covered that. So I will not repeat that. But what flexible meaning is that do not be like a one song banjo or what was it, one trick pony kind of thing. So for example, if you in the past have achieved something using a certain strategy or a tactic, and you know, I like, all right, it worked. So do not assume that it will work all the time, because you know what you what worked that time is because of the circumstances, the time in space and all that stuff. It's that's how your particular approach worked. Times change, people change, positions change, all that stuff. So it's super important to keep, remain flexible. So if you have an idea of, for example, mass participation is a good one. You know, all right, we want a new status for indigenous peoples. I don't want to say like there are multiple ways to roam, but in terms of the strategy, that's it. However, the tactics, we can be a little bit flexible. We can figure out later. All right. Instead of, so what we wanted actually is that in the sessional workshops at the Human Rights Council's level, we want to have several 2-day meetings, so 4 2-day meetings for of the Human Rights Council. Well, obviously, we didn't get that. We got 2 2-day meetings. Does that mean that, like, well, huh? Shoot, we lost? No. We'll just adjust. We just, all right, so let's adapt. And well, it's still workable and we'll still go for it. Same thing is that if you think about it, like the UN Declaration, how that was developed. You had like clear, like friendly, unfriendly states. Took us 30 years to get the UN Declaration. Started in Geneva and then adopted in Geneva, kicked up to New York. So that's good. No, that those are elements that you can think about. It's like when and you start as a model, not as like a copy paste, but as a model for whatever that you want to create or to achieve within the UN system for to advance the rights of indigenous peoples. So the thing is that that is something that we're thinking about in the NS participation process as well. 2017 didn't go as how we wanted it to go. So the last thing that we should be doing is do what Einstein said, is to keep doing over and over and over again and accepting every time expecting a different outcome, which is the very definition of insanity. So, all right, 2017, this is how we did, didn't work. So how are we going to do it this time around so that it works, and look around, shop around in a way for how we did it in the past that didn't work and model it, massage it a little bit. But also like, since 2017, a lot of things have happened. BBNJ happened with some language that first time in a legally binding instrument that acknowledges indigenous peoples, the rights of indigenous peoples, and also a differentiation between indigenous peoples and local communities. You know, so all right, cool. So let's see how we can use that model a little bit to apply to the mass participation process. That's what I mean with being flexible, like do jujitsu, and keep. Again, I think like the key word in all this is humility. Be as humble as possible to always say like, I'm stupid. I'm still learning. I keep on learning, so that you know you pick up stuff, and then you're like you listen to everyone, and then they're like, oh, hold on, a pattern starts to emerge, and all of a sudden you have a roadmap or you have a plan. And that's how we did, how I did the negotiation on, well, and as participation, how we're doing it. The local communities in these people's platform at the UNFCCC, the Santiago Network, the Loss and Damage Fund, you know, like almost in every process, like at least my mindset was like that, like, all right, watch, learn, observe, and like, and then look around, shop around. Like it's, there's so many things happening within the UN system that you can like shop around, like elements from different processes that you can use to your advantage. And the UN does, particularly the member states, love nothing more than using agreed language and using that, you know, or things that have already been done before within a different context. So you do that. So that's what I mean, like, and basically flexible, stay dynamic. And yeah, like I said, how you build the strength to keep going on is like, create your own circle. Like have friends that you can rely on 100%. And, you know, like, and it might expand, it might shrink, it might expand, it might shrink, but keep a core group of people that keep you sane. You know, that think the same way that you do, that want to do the same things that you want to do, because then it becomes a race to the top. If you have people in your circle that are like slightly different, you know, do not have the same objective, or I'm an enthusiast and I like to move fast. If you have people that are like the exact opposite, like it becomes a race to the bottom. So be very, how should I say it? Critical about your own circle and be your own traffic cop. You're the only one that can allow people in or out. You know, so that's how you stay strong. That's how you keep moving forward. And then also like having that human, that level of humility to keep listening, keep observing. That'll keep you like staying strong and flexible, particularly when within these spaces, because you need to be flexible, you need to be going to be almost everywhere. Number 10 is tackling travel and money challenges, which is similar to like the funding issue. Travel obviously, start collecting points. That's super helpful, because even if you don't have enough points to get like award tickets, it'll definitely get you enough experience points, whatever, so that you can travel more in a relaxed way. For example, economy comfort or economy plus, whatever. You know, like, so because those things can also help in terms of, you know, like showing up to a meeting like relaxed. Yeah, like what you can do is like if you go to a PIM forum, that you bunk up with people that are also looking for a place to stay. The thing is, like 9 out of 10 emails that I get before the payment form and before an action mechanism is always like, hey, I want to go to the payment form. I want to go with the action mechanism. Can you help me in finding funds? Well, not like I said, like I have a hard time like finding funds for myself alone, let alone for other people. But like it can be like more like resourceful in terms of like, yeah, like sharing accommodation. Do not, like cut back on food. Make sure that you are, because your mental health is super important. Make sure that you eat well, that you drink enough water and all that stuff. So do not cut back on that. Yeah, and exercise. So after every meeting, for example, Human Rights Council for the last 5 weeks, what I do is I walk for 15 minutes to go home, just like to relax, all that, get this cortisol out and, you know, get my steps in, no less stuff. So that also, like, it's not necessarily like money challenge, but it definitely is part of like, your whole sense of how you feel about where you are, who you are, and all that stuff. So I'll definitely like think a little bit more about travel and money challenges, and then I'll probably like talk about that more in depth in some other video. And then the final one is, yeah, like I said, it's we're working together as a united front. The thing is that a lot of the things that we do requires teamwork and cooperation amongst Indigenous people, stronger voice. So that's why we created this Indigenous coordinating body for the UNASP participation. That's why I'm leading the Article 6 and Loss and Damage negotiation team within the caucus. So make sure that, you know, we're all covering all bases, that everything is going in the way, you know, like that we're privy of everything that's happening, teamwork. And like part of that is also is that delegating. So right now with the Article 6 and Loss and Damage team, what we did is we have deadlines on several documents. So what I did was, all right, hey, who wants it to be co-lead on this document, and wants it to keep an eye on that document that they are drafting with other constituencies. And just say like, all right, hey, I just want, and the only thing that I do is like, I'll say a timeline. This is when I want to see zero draft. Then is when we're going to meet. Then we're going to like go through the zero draft, revise it, and then we'll meet again. And then we'll put a stamp on it, and then I'll send it out. Which also is good for the group process as well, because everyone wants to be. It's super important that in every major undertaking, in every group process, that everyone has a sense of agency. So that literally everyone has a feeling of, this is a piece of me in that. The last thing you should be doing is that, well, hey, my way or the highway. And you're like, no. Your idea is not good. We'll stick to this. That's the worst thing you can do, because you rely on enthusiasm. You rely on the dedication of people, and you need to do as much as possible to keep people engaged. So basically, when you're in a group process, and particularly when you're a team leader, the last thing you should be doing is dictate. The first thing you should be doing is facilitate. Just facilitate the platform for people to have this conversation, facilitate the decision-maker process, and we make a decision collectively, and we move to the next item. The last thing you should be doing is you have this process as a pseudo-process for pushing through what you want them to do. That's not a good group process. That's not even a group at all. That's just you being a dictator. So work together as united front. Always keep that in mind, is that facilitate. If you're in a leadership position, role, and I'm sure you are, facilitate. And be open to new ideas and have that discussion. Like, so that people feel safe and accepted and welcome enough that I can bring that forward. You might disagree with it, but it's good to have that discussion, good to have that conversation. So I think that is like what I wanted to cover, like the 10 main challenges that Indigenous peoples face when it comes to participation, and like my thoughts on like how to address them. Hope it was helpful, and yeah, see you at the next episode.
My friends, that's the end of the episode, but there's more, way more. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcast and platform, of course. And by the way, there are more nuggets of wisdom on YouTube. So check out my name, Ghazali Ohorella, on YouTube. Subscribe and watch your favorite movie. I don't make movies. Videos. Sorry about that. And again, thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye.